doubt upon my rule, we would be torn to shreds by foreign powers. It would destroy Miraji, just like my father would have destroyed it before us. Chapter 25. It was closer to dawn than dusk when I returned to the harem. I hated the quiet. I could hear my fears that much louder for it. Back in the rebel camp, there was no such thing as silence, even in the darkest hours of night. There was the clink of weapons on those keeping watch, conversations whispered in the night, the riffling of paper from Ahmed's tent as he worried long after the rest of us had stopped. Here, any night sound was covered by the gentle running of water or the patter of birds. My fingers were slick with fat from the skin of the duck and sticky with the sweetness of the orange. I wiped my hands across the hem of my kurti as I stepped into my rooms, starting to pull the clothes over my head.
"What kind of a time do you call this, young lady?"
The voice made me jump violently. Dropping the hem of my shirt, I reached for a weapon I didn't have. Exhaustion and confusion blurred my vision for a moment. There was a figure sitting on my bed in a khalat. A khalat I recognized, because it belonged to Shahzad, I realized after a moment. Only the person wearing it was a head taller than Shahzad, at least, and had wider shoulders that pulled at the fabric enough to make some of the stitching pop. The face was hidden by a shima, one blonde curl escaping underneath to drop lazily over pale blue eyes. Sam. "What the hell are you doing here?" I hissed, glancing around nervously as I dropped down on the mat across from him. "Someone might see you."
"Oh, plenty of folk have."
Sam lowered his voice to a whisper to match me. He loosened the shima around his face. It was tied correctly this time. I could only guess his way of knotting it haphazardly like an infant had bugged Shahzad as much as it did me.
"But who's going to notice another woman in here?"
He had a point. Women seem to appear and disappear in the harem without anyone batting an eye.
Shahzad's idea. She didn't think it was a good idea for you to get caught with a man in your bed. Although I don't know if I have the figure to pull off this khalat.
He cinched it around his waist with his hands, like he was trying to make it fit him properly. "Don't worry. None of us can fill out a khalat the way Shahzad can," I said. But there was something nagging at me. "Jin's not back yet." It wasn't a question. I didn't even have to test the truth out on my tongue before saying it, because if Jin were back, Sam wouldn't be here alone. Sam kicked back, lacing his hands behind his head.
"This is the rebel prince's missing brother I keep hearing about. He's the one you wish was waiting for you in your bed right now, I gather."
He winked at me. I dodged the comment. "He wouldn't make nearly so convincing a girl as you do," I said. "Are you wearing makeup?"
"Oh yes, just a little. Shahzad did it for me."
He preened a little. "She must like you. I'm usually the only person she does that for."
"She was worried about you after you missed meeting me by the Weeping Wall tonight."
I'd missed my meeting time with Sam by a long way after I'd given up trying to escape the dinner.
"In particular, she was concerned you might, and these are her words, do something typically Amani-ish and get yourself caught. She's got the entire camp packed up and ready to move again if I didn't find you by dawn."
Somewhere in the midst of dining with the Sultan, I'd stopped feeling afraid of him finding out who I was. Sam's words were a sharp reminder that I wasn't risking only my own life.
We'd been found once already. I've been waiting for so long, I was beginning to think she was right, and that I'd have to take up the mantle of the blue-eyed bandit permanently. And after being filled in on what something typically Amani-ish means, I'm not sure I'm up to the task. Did you really throw yourself under the hooves of a Buraki? I'd lose a rib doing that. I rolled my eyes, letting the joke in his voice burn away some of the guilt. If there was ever motivation to stay alive, I trailed off. I couldn't exactly tell him that Shahzad had been wrong to worry. I had, after all, nearly been trampled by a Buraki, twice. And I had sat across from our enemy and discussed Ahmed over dinner that night. You can tell Shahzad I'm still alive, and I have free rein in the palace now. You should lead with that. I dropped down next to him. Before you tell her that I missed our meeting because I was dining with the Sultan. Sam burst out laughing so loud, I was worried he might wake someone. The harem had thin walls.
So what does a rebel talk to the Sultan about these days? Though my mother has always said to keep politics away from the dinner table, so perhaps you just discussed the weather. Though best I can tell, you only have one type of weather here.
I could still taste the orange on my lips when I ran my tongue across them. I considered what the Sultan had said about the fact that he was trying to stop a war Ahmed was helping to instigate, that giving over this information would help the rebellion but might hurt Miraji. The Sultan is going after Saramutai.
I reached into my shirt and pulled out the map of the supply route. The drawing of Norsham's armor was wrapped around my upper arm.
500 men are to leave Isman in 3 days, marching on the city through Ilyaz. Sam stayed quiet as I pulled confidential information out of my clothes, which was commendable, really. There are too many to stop. Iz or Maz can get there ahead of the Sultan's troops with a warning easily and evacuate everyone.
Evacuate them where?
Sam said. I don't know.
I finally pulled the map of Isman out from the waistband of my trousers and leaned back, sprawling my aching legs across the bed of pillows so that they tangled with the hem of his borrowed kalat.
But it's either get them out, or someone talks Ahmed into letting Delilah try to make a whole city disappear long enough to baffle the Sultan's troops. Tell Shahzad. She'll know what to do.
Seems like you already know what to do.
I shrugged. I'd spent the last half a year listening to Shahzad and Ahmed strategize. I picked up a few things. There's more.
I laid out the movements of other soldiers for Sam, struggling to remember all the details from the war council. There were more traveling south into the territory that Ahmed had claimed, sensing a weakness. But it was a diversion. Saramutai was the only city they were going to take back for now.
When the troops start to leave the city, it won't be so swarming with soldiers anymore, I pointed out. Shahzad said half the rebellion was short on things to do. Well, this is a good chance to change that.
Supply routes to the army, and I don't know what this one is marking.
I pointed out the red dots. But seems worth looking into. I handed him the stack of papers and gave him as much as I could remember from the war council, each a precarious building block towards peace in Miraji that we could dismantle, that we could seize and use as a weapon in the rebellion. And I tried to shake the feeling that I was a traitor to my whole country with every word I spoke.
Chapter 26. Now that I could leave the harem, I spent as little time as I could there.
The palace could have been a barren wasteland to rival the last county, and I wouldn't have cared, so long as it was free of Kadir and Ayet and the rest of the gaggle of wives. I was required a few hours every day at the Sultan's meetings. He met with each of the foreign delegations separately. The Albish ambassador was an ancient man with pale, age-spotted hands that shook so hard he couldn't hold a pen. I overheard him tell his scribe that I reminded him of his granddaughter. He didn't lie as viciously as the Galen, but he didn't come ready to hand over the truth, either. He might wear a kinder face, but he wanted something from us, same as the Galen did. The Sichian didn't have an ambassador. They sent a general, who eyed me with distrust with every word I spoke. I sat behind the Sultan in each meeting, to his right, where he could catch my eye when someone was talking and know the truth of it. I kept the men negotiating the terms of the ceasefire honest, and I learned as much as I could while I was at it. I learned where the foreign troops were stationed along our borders. I learned who the Sultan trusted and what he knew about the rebellion. His son, Rahim, Layla's brother, attended every single meeting. He scarcely spoke unless his father asked him something directly. A few times I caught him watching me. After a few meetings, I learned that I couldn't avoid Kadir entirely outside of the harem. Every so often, he would turn up at negotiations too, forcing a place for himself at the table. Unlike his brother, he offered opinions his father didn't ask for. Once I caught one of the ministers rolling his eyes as Kadir spoke. Kadir was the only person who seemed to be able to get a word out of Prince Rahim unsolicited. The two princes sparked off each other like angry flint. I remembered what the Sultan had said, that Rahim would make a good choice for Sultim if he weren't so ruled by his emotions. So far, I hadn't seen any emotion from him except hatred for Kadir. I returned to the harem every night to meet with Sam at dusk and hand over what I'd gathered. What was left of the days belonged to me to spend however I wanted outside the walls of the harem. I explored as freely as I could, while carefully avoiding the foreigners who were gradually invading the palace. There were 100 more gardens that bloomed so thick with flowers I could barely get the doors open, or where music seemed to drift through the walls along with a breeze that smelled of salt and bright air. It wasn't until I climbed a tower that looked out over the water, and the same air picked up my clothes and hair in a rush, that I realized it was the sea. I'd spent my short time on the sea drugged and bound, but that wasn't the memory the sea air stirred up. It was sitting on a dusty shop floor, as far from the water as I could be, with my fingers dancing along the tattoos on Jin's skin. Once I rounded a corner to see a figure ahead, walking with a limp that was so familiar, I was ready to turn and run. I stopped walking so abruptly when I saw him that the guard accompanying me that day walked straight into me. The shame on his face was the most expression I ever got out of one of them. It was nice to know they were human, somewhere under that uniform at least. It turned out it was only an Albish soldier, wounded by a Mirajin bullet before the ceasefire. Besides, to me, it didn't walk with a limp anymore, I remembered. I was putting on a good show of wandering aimlessly, but the Sultan wasn't stupid enough to give me complete freedom in the palace either. A soldier waited for me outside the gates of the harem every morning and latched onto me like a silent shadow. The soldier changed every day, and none spoke except to tell me when I was wanted at a meeting. If I tried to take a turn I wasn't supposed to, my guard just became a new wall between me and whatever door or passageway I was heading for. A heavily armed wall that just stared straight ahead until I took the hint. But I wasn't about to give up. I needed to get back to Bahadur, the genie, my father. The Sultan's new hidden weapon. I had to find a way to free him before the Sultan could use him to annihilate us.
I wished I wasn't so familiar with the feeling of waking up in trouble. But the harem was softening me. Used to be, an intruder's presence would have woken me well before getting close enough to put a blade against my neck. I wrenched myself to sitting, heart racing in panic, ready to face whatever threat the night was bringing. Soldiers. Ghouls. Worse. Ayat. The light of the mostly full moon shivered along the blade in her hand as she drew away from me. Not a knife, I realized. Scissors. More dangerous was the smile on her face. In her other hand, her fist was curled around a long, dark braid. My hand flew to my scalp. The last person who'd bothered to cut my hair was my mother, before she died. In the years since, it had reached close to halfway down my spine, though it spent most of its time twisted under my shima. Now it ended bluntly, just above my shoulders. Let's see how much he wants you now that you look like a boy. Ayat wound a piece of my slaughtered hair around her finger with a sneer. Anger rushed through me, fiercer than anything so stupid and vain warranted. But I didn't care if it was stupid and vain. I moved as fast as I knew how, lunging for her. Before she could so much as flinch, the scissors were in my hand. I might not be able to hurt her, but she didn't know that. I pressed the blade against her throat and had the satisfaction of watching her eyes widen. Listen to me. I had a grip on the front of her culotte before she could make a run for it. I have bigger things to deal with than your jealousy about your husband's wandering eyes. So why don't you go take this out on someone who actually wants to steal him from you? Ayat laughed bitterly, throat moving against the blunt scissors pressed to her neck. You really think this is jealousy? You think I want Kadir? What I want is to survive the harem. This place is a battlefield, and I think you must know that, or else what did you do with Muna and Uzma? What are you talking about? Trying as hard as I could to stay out of the way of Kadir and his wives, I hadn't been in the harem enough to notice anything about Uzma since she'd tried to humiliate me in court. Uzma has disappeared, Ayat sneered, but I could see the fear behind those eyes now. Girls like her were dropping like flies, and all she had to protect herself was a pair of scissors. Just like Muna. People vanish out of the harem all the time, but Kadir only has 3 Marajin wives, and then you arrive and 2 of them disappear. Do you think that's a coincidence? No. Coincidence didn't have so cruel a sense of humor. Jin said that to me once. But I know this wasn't me. It took me until mid-morning the next day to find Shira. She was sprawled across a throne of cushions in the shade of a huge tree, attended by a half dozen servants. 2 women stood guard, while 1 laid cool cloths on her skin, another fanned her, and another massaged her feet. The last one was immobile but ready, sweat beading down from the lip of the pitcher over her hands. She looked flushed and uncomfortable standing just outside of the shade. It looked like the future Sultan of Miraji already had his own court, even if he was really the son of a fake blue-eyed bandit. And Shira was taking advantage of it for the few weeks left before she gave birth to him. She was a long way from Dustwalk now. As I got closer, one of the servants standing guard blocked my path. The blessed Sultima has no desire for company today. Sure, the blessed Sultima looks as solitary as a hermit today. It was on the tip of my tongue, but my Demji side didn't recognize the difference between sarcasm and a lie. I had to satisfy myself with raising my eyebrow at the small crowd surrounding her. The woman didn't seem to appreciate the irony.
Shira, I called out, over the servant's shoulder. She lifted her head enough to squint at me, sucking on a date pit between her fingers. She pulled an annoyed face, but waved her hand. Let her through. The servant moved aside reluctantly. I gave Shira a pointed look. With another dramatic sigh, she dismissed them. Everything from the wave of her fingers to the sprawl of her body looked lazy, but her sharp eyes never left me. So that's what Ayet wanted scissors for, she said by way of greeting, as her court dissipated. I was wondering. You know, I thought about cutting it all off back in Dustwalk when you slept a few feet away from me, but I actually worried short hair might suit you. She tilted her head. I guess I was wrong. You got Sam to smuggle you in a pair of scissors? I caught myself tugging on the ends where they didn't quite reach my shoulders and dropped my hand, but not before Shira caught the gesture. You're surprised? She ran her hands along her swollen middle. I supposed I shouldn't be. Shira and Sam might not be anything more than a means to an end for each other, but she was carrying a child that meant something to both of them. Still, I'd figured Sam was with us now. The notion that he might still be getting into other trouble we didn't know about while smuggling information for us made me uneasy. And I'd be lying if I said I wasn't just a little bit angry he could be so cummy with me, all while handing over tools to humiliate me with when I wasn't looking. Just be grateful I refused to procure her a knife. A slit throat would suit you even less than... She waved a hand vaguely. That. I swallowed back a retort. I couldn't get into a war of words with my cousin just now. What kind of game are you playing, Shira? It's called survival. Shira extended a hand towards me, opening and closing her fingers like a demanding child. I took her hand, helping her sit up so she could look at me straight on instead of from the ground. She moved slowly, one hand splayed protectively over her middle. I would do anything for the survival of my son. And what are you going to do if your son is born looking like Sam? I challenged. Blue eyes look awfully suspicious on desert folks, I can tell you that much. He won't be. She said it with such determination, I could almost believe she could truth-tell it into existence, even though I was the Demji here. I haven't done all this just to fail at the end. Do you know how hard I have worked to never be alone here in the harem since it became known that I was pregnant? I traded those scissors for a secret from Ayet that I can hold on to like a shield against her. Because I need to keep her away from me more than I need to keep her away from you. Don't get me wrong, you're an excellent distraction. But when I give birth, it is over for his other wives, unless they can give him a son too. And they can't, and they all know that. So do you honestly think Ayet is above doing away with a pregnant girl to keep herself alive? I've seen what you do for survival, Amani. I know you understand. Tamid bleeding out onto the sand. I pushed the image away. Is that why Muna and Uzma have disappeared? Your survival? Interesting. Shira sucked on the date pit between her teeth. Here I'd been thinking Muna and Uzma were your doing. Seeing how you're rubbing elbows with the Sultan now. They weren't all that nice to you. And it looks to me like you've got the power to make them disappear if you wanted. If I was going to get rid of them, I'd start with Ayet. I shoved that thought away. So if it wasn't my doing or your doing, girls don't just vanish into thin air. Not outside of stories, at least. Shira ran her tongue along her teeth. A hint of worry creasing her eyebrows as she looked far away. Then her attention snapped back to me.
Let's say I wanted your help for something.
Shira peeled one of the cloths from her forehead.
What would you want in trade?
Why should I help you? I crossed my arms. I've got your life to trade you if I need anything. What else have I got to gain from you?
You're a lot worse at this survival game than I thought you'd be.
Shira sounded really and truly exasperated, like we were kids again, and I was too stupid to understand the rules to some game she'd made up in the schoolyard.
Then why don't you tell me how you want to play? I want information, Shira said. I've seen you with Layla, the scrawny princess with no charm.
What about her? I sounded defensive, even to my own ears. Whatever time I did spend in the harem was usually spent with Layla. We took our meals together. Usually I ate, while her food went cold as her whole attention spilled into whatever little mechanical toy she was constructing.
She's up to something,
Shira said simply. Layla? I failed to keep the skepticism out of my voice this time. Is it all the toys she builds for children that makes you suspicious, or the fact that she's still almost a child herself?
She sneaks around.
Shira reached for a fresh cooling cloth.
She leaves the harem, and I don't know where she's going. I can't follow her.
But you can. You want to know where she's going? It was hard to take her seriously when she was making accusations against someone 2 years younger than us.
You're worried about Layla? Of course not, Shira rolled her eyes. I'm worried about her brother.
Prince Rahim. Ah, now that didn't sound so stupid.
Rumor has it he's in a great deal of favor with his father, the Sultan.
That much was true. I remembered what the Sultan had said about Rahim over Duck that night.
You think he might have designs on the throne?
I suddenly saw where her train of thought was going. There was no love lost between Rahim and Kadir. I just didn't know if he hated him enough to snatch away his wives. But if he did, Shira had to be a target.
Oh, look at that. You're not as dumb as you act.
Shira draped the new damp cloth over her brow. It sent rivulets of water across her eyebrows and down her cheeks.
The rumor was that before Kadir proved he was able to conceive an heir,
she ran her hand along her swollen middle.
The Sultan was close to taking the throne from him. Rahim was said to be the favorite. Why else is he back in court when he's a commander in Ilyaz?
That name sparked a pain in my side where the bullet scar was. Ilyaz was a sore reminder of being shot.
If he does have designs on the throne, and he's using his sister's knowledge of the harem to get to it, I want to know.
And there must be something you want in return for information on Layla and her brother. Layla had helped me when I needed to get free of the harem. She'd guided me in my first days in the harem. She'd saved me from Kadir's wives. She was as close to a friend as I was going to get inside these walls. And I wasn't the girl who betrayed friends anymore. Only Shira didn't know that. She knew me as the girl from Dustwalk who left Tamid bleeding in the sand, who would do what she needed to get what she wanted. But the beginnings of an idea were sparking in my mind. I'd been looking for a way to shed my guard. This might be one.
What if I needed a distraction? For the guards.
A distraction like a pregnant Sultima pretending to go into childbirth weeks early? She caught on quick.
And folk in Dustwalk used to say you were as dumb as you were pretty.
I couldn't keep it in, petty as it was. I was still angry with her about my hair.
I made it through 16 years in that town with a whole lot less trouble than you did, Shira pointed out. Why do you need a distraction anyway? Are you trying to slip off to see a certain cripple of yours hiding in the palace? Because you ought to know, you might not get as warm a welcome as you're hoping for. Tamid is none of your business. My thumb jabbed at the metal under my arm painfully. It was almost a tick now. She'd found my sore spot, and the smile playing over her mouth said she knew it.
Oh, so you do know he's here.
She saw the answer written all over my face.
They took both of us, because you left us.
You wanted to go because Fazim was done with you. That blow landed so hard that I almost regretted it the second the stricken look bloomed over her face. But she'd hit first. It was a bad idea to play chicken with someone who'd known you your whole life. Nobody came out a winner. Shira pulled the mask of Saltima back on.
Say you'll bring me information about Layla, and I'll be your distraction.
She stuck out one hand, heavy with new gold bangles. One of them, no doubt, already traded to Sam for the scissors that had cut my hair. They clattered impatiently together.
Do we have a deal?
I took her hand and pulled her to her feet. Let's go. I had to admit, Shira wasn't a half bad actress. Her screams were so convincing, I worried a few times that fate really was cruel enough to send her into labor the same moment she'd been faking it. She sure slumped on me heavily enough as we staggered through the gates of the harem. Her cries and sobs covered my words to the guard waiting for me. He was young, and his eyes went wide with panic as his Saltima collapsed into his arms. And just like that, Shira had shifted from my shoulder to his, grabbing all his attention and weighing him down as I staggered back out of his view. For a second, his head turned to follow me, remembering his duty. But a new scream from Shira quickly drew him back. And then I was gone, running as fast as I could. Shira's screams faded behind me as I bolted across the courtyard and into the halls of the palace toward the mosaic of Hawa.
I'd been told that my eyes were the color of the sea on a bright day, that they were the shade of the desert sky. Foreigner's eyes. Trader eyes.
But the truth was, I'd never seen anything exactly the same color as my eyes until I met Norsham. We had our father's eyes. It was a foreign feeling for those same blue eyes to watch me from where Bahadur sat in the iron circle as I descended the steps into the palace vaults. He didn't speak when I reached the edge of the circle. Neither did I.
You're not meant to be here, are you?
Bahadur finally spoke. I'd only briefly wondered about my father in the years since I'd figured out that my mother's husband wasn't really my father. With my blue eyes, I'd always figured he was some foreign soldier, and I didn't want to be half foreign, so I didn't think about it. I'd been a bit more curious since finding out I was a Demji. Since I'd learned my eyes were a mark my father left me along with my power, I'd wondered what I would feel when I finally came face to face with him, just the two of us. I hadn't expected that I'd feel so much anger. I'm here because I need to know how to free you. I crossed my arms over my body, locking my anger inside my gut. There was no room for it here, no time. Not because I especially care whether or not you ever get to go back to making me some more Demji siblings who might destroy the world, but I might care if the Sultan uses you to burn all his enemies alive or bury their cities in sand.
I only buried a city in sand once.
He meant Masil, I realized. I'd been there with Jin. Before I even knew what I was, before we crossed the sand sea. You didn't think that might have been an overreaction? I asked. Bahadur watched me carefully, never blinking those blue eyes.
I don't need you to free me, Amani. I have existed since time began. This is not the first time I have been summoned and held by a mortal with more greed than caution. Eventually, I always find myself free, one way or another. When it happens doesn't matter.
Well, it matters to me. The words came out more violently than I'd meant them to. You might live forever, but our kind is known for running out of time. This is all the time I have. This is all the time any of us has. And we've got a war to win before it's over, and lives that'll get lost earlier if we don't. So tell me, if you've been captured so many times before, are there words to free you?
There are, though I do not know them. But there is another way. One you already know, because you know the story of Akeem and his wife.
My mother had told me that story when I was young. I hadn't thought of it in years. Akeem was a scholar, a wise man, but a poor one. Knowledge did not often bring wealth, no matter what the holy texts said. And in his studies, he stumbled across the true name of a genie. He used this to summon the genie to him and trap him in a circle of iron coins. One day, while descending to get more sugar from the basement, Akeem's wife found the genie. She was much neglected by her husband in favor of his books, and so she was easily tempted by the genie. He told her that if she only freed him, he could give her the child she so desired. So Akeem's wife broke the circle of coins that held the genie and freed him. At this point in the story, my mother would usually pause dramatically before throwing a handful of gunpowder in the fireplace and letting it explode. Releasing the genie without banishing him with the right words was like releasing a dam of fire. The genie burned Akeem's wife alive, and with her, the rest of the house. You killed Akeem and his wife. It wasn't a question. It was a truth.
Yes.
There wasn't a hint of remorse there.
That might have been an overreaction,
he admitted. We would have to break the circle. Only this circle wasn't made of coins. It was set into the ground. We'd need something powerful. Something like gunpowder. Bahadur was my father. I didn't think he'd burn me inside out, but there was no telling.
There were other ways for you to learn how to free me. There are others with this knowledge.
Bahadur watched me from inside the circle. He was inhumanly still. He didn't shift with restlessness or fiddle with his clothing as a human would.
Why did you really take such pains to come see me, Amani?
Do you remember my mother? I hated myself for asking, for caring if he remembered one woman out of what I was sure were many in thousands of years. Zahia Al-Fadi, from Dustwalk. Do you remember her?
I remember everyone.
Did I imagine the change in my father's voice? The slight shift from the flat, empty tone he'd addressed me with so far?
Your mother was very beautiful. You look like her. She was running away from her home, through the mountains. She wouldn't have made it very far. She had enough supplies for a few days, not a real escape. She would have been forced to turn back or die eventually. I had sprung one of your people's ancient traps, the ones you set for the Buraki. Crude, but being iron,
It did what it should have. Zahia found me in it. She released me.
So why didn't you save her?
There it was. The question I'd really wanted to ask. Not whether my mother had made any kind of lasting mark on this immortal, powerful being, but why it hadn't been enough for him to save her life.
How could he leave her with me, a child who she'd eventually die protecting, and not have the decency to step in? You could have, couldn't you? You could have saved her.
Yes. I could have appeared on the day your people chose to hang her, and I could have cut her down and carried her away. Like in all those stories she told you as a child. But to what end? To keep her in a tower for a handful more years as my wife? She was mortal. Even you, who have a little bit of my fire, you will die too one day. Dying is what you do. It is the only thing that you all do without fault or fail. If I had saved her then, she would have died another way later.
But she would have had longer. I could hear the tears in my own voice. We could have escaped.
Her death wouldn't have been my fault. You did escape, he said.
My temper snapped. Don't you find it tiring not caring about anything ever for all eternity? I didn't want to cry in front of him. I hated how much I cared if I cried in front of him. But it was too late. Through the tears, I could hear footsteps now, distantly. Soldiers were coming for me. You let my mother hang. You let me and Norsham face each other in war. Both of us, your children. The footsteps were behind me now. I was screaming. You stood there while I held that knife against my stomach. You made us. Why don't you care about us? And then it was too late. The soldiers were grabbing me, yanking me away from my father, dragging me up the stairs as I fought against them, still shouting. Something pricked the side of my neck. A needle, I realized, in the hands of the guard. There was something on the metal. I knew instantly. Something to make me sleep. Suddenly, everything rushed to my head. I felt the floor tip out from under me. I would have hit the ground, except someone caught me. Strong arms.
Amani.
My name punctured the storm of feelings.
I've got you.
Jin.
No. When my vision cleared, the Sultan was the one propping me up. He was strong. I tried to struggle, but with one swift gesture, his hands went under my knees, and he lifted me into his arms like I was a child. He started to walk, each step shaking me closer to his heartbeat. I struggled for some half-truth to cover what I'd been doing. My mouth felt fuzzy as the drugs kicked in, the motion making me sick. You wanted to see your father.
I waited for the punishment, for the anger.
We passed out of the cool shade of the courtyard through another set of doors. Tree canopies spread out high above me, the sunlight dancing through their branches.
Yes,
I admitted. And that was the simplest truth. I had wanted to face him. I'd wanted an explanation. I was swimming in and out of dreams now.
I was starting to shake, too. Every part of me wanted to curl into the warmth of another body holding me, like I was a small child being carried by my father. But he wasn't my father. He was Ahmed's and Jin's, and Naguib's, and Kadir's, and Rahim's, and Layla's, and he was a murderer. I was dimly aware that we were in the harem. I felt the Sultan kneel down, and then I was being laid down in a bed thick with scattered pillows that crowded around me.
Fathers often disappoint us, Amani. Chapter 27.
There was a gift next to me when I woke up. It had been left while I slept, a conspicuously perfect, tidy package of paper and ribbon amid the haphazard mess of pillows flung around my room. It swam into focus slowly as I emerged from the haze of drugs. I pressed myself up onto my elbows, ignoring the pitcher of water next to me. No matter how dry my mouth was, I wasn't about to risk something that might send me back to sleep. I poked at the gift with my foot cautiously, half expecting some trick from Ayat. When nothing exploded, I finally picked it up. Blue fabric appeared below the paper. It was a culotte. The fabric was the color that the sea had been, the brief glimpse of it I'd had from the deck of the ship. And the hem and the sleeves were trimmed in gold stitching. When I looked at the embroidery closely, I realized it was the story of Princess Hawa in tiny golden detail. On my right sleeve, where she rode the Buraki across the desert, there were even tiny gold beads showing the dust kicked up under its hooves. It was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. I'd hated wearing blue most of my life. It just made my eyes more obvious than they already were. It was one of a thousand reasons I'd loved the red Shima Jin stole for me. Only I didn't hate this culotte. I slipped it on, reveling in the feeling of the fabric against my skin. It occurred to me that I'd never worn a piece of clothing that had never been worn by anyone else before. My clothes in Dustwalk were all cast-offs from cousins. I'd bought second-hand clothes in Juniper City when I fled there. Even my clothes in the rebel camp were Shazad's. This was the first thing I'd ever worn that truly fit me. It had been made for me, and I knew what it meant. It was forgiveness for going to see Bahadur. In spite of the Sultan's gift, I didn't know what I might have lost by tricking my way out of the harem. The Sultan's trust, definitely. My freedom, too, probably. There was nothing stopping him from stripping away the freedom he'd given me with just a few words. He wouldn't be wrong not to trust me to leave the harem. I ran my thumb over the raised golden thread of the sleeve as I headed for the edge of the harem. I was working to destroy him, after all. But even though my steps slowed the closer I got to the gates, I didn't meet any invisible barriers there. I passed through the archway that led towards the palace the same way I had yesterday, when Shira and I had been tricking our way out. Still, I didn't quite dare drop my guard just yet. But there was no battalion of soldiers waiting for me at the gates, either. Just one man, same as always. Only it wasn't a soldier. Or rather, it wasn't just any soldier. Prince Rahim, Layla's brother, wearing his commander's uniform, was waiting for me outside the gates, hands clasped behind his back. The one who'd spoken that day in court as if he was born on a battlefield. The one who'd watched me with dark eyes that made me nervous so often during negotiations. He didn't speak a whole lot, but when he did, it was always something worth hearing. "Well, at least I know you won't be able to outrun me in that," Rahim said, taking in my culotte. He offered me his right arm. "Isn't being my escort a bit below the station of a prince?" I asked, pushing past him and heading towards the now familiar path to the council chamber. He fell into step behind me. "I managed to convince my father that you might need someone with a little more experience to watch you. Possibly someone bright enough to know that the Sultima isn't due to give birth for weeks. Not a bad trick, though." "Am I supposed to be flattered?" I asked as we passed under a blue and white mosaic archway. "That I get a commander watching me?" Rahim's lip twitched up.
You don't remember me. It wasn't a question. We've never met before. It was on the tip of my tongue, but it wouldn't go any further. I looked at him curiously out of the corner of my eye as we walked, my mind racing to place him. I thought he looked familiar when I first met him, but I chalked that up to his resemblance to Layla and to their father. Then again, he tapped the place my scar was by my hip. You did go down awfully fast with that bullet. A blast, the smell of gunpowder, a shooting pain in my side, then darkness. In Ilyaz. A soldier behind Jin raising a gun, finger already on the trigger. I knew him all at once. I stopped short. You shot me in Ilyaz.
I did.
Rahim kept walking, apparently satisfied now that we were such old friends with a history of gunpowder and near death between us.
Although, luckily for us, it looks like I didn't do an especially good job of it. So here's hoping you can forgive me and we can start over.
He knew. He'd seen me in Ilyaz, which meant he knew who I was. He knew I wasn't just a Demji from the last county. Rahim realized I wasn't following him anymore. He stopped, too, turning back to face me.
I had my suspicions as soon as I saw you at court that day. But I wasn't sure until my brother's charming wife decided to expose you a little.
He looked embarrassed saying it, at least, but I still felt the heat of the old humiliation prickle across my skin.
I knew as soon as I saw the scar on your hip.
So why am I walking to a council meeting with you, instead of hanging by my ankles in a cell, telling your father all the secrets of the rebellion?
We hang people by the wrists now, instead of the ankles, Rahim said. Keeps prisoners more lucid if all the blood doesn't rush to their head.
I couldn't tell if he was joking.
You don't have much of a way with words. Anyone ever tell you that? That's why I'm a soldier, not a politician. Or I used to be.
Rahim drummed his fingers across the sword on his belt.
My father and I aren't on the best of terms.
And selling out the blue-eyed bandit to him wouldn't put you back in his good graces? I asked.
My father doesn't have any good graces. He's just very good at pretending he does when it suits him. Which puts you and me on the interesting same side of hating my father.
I watched him carefully. This had to be a trick, some ploy of the Sultan's. Only I was at his mercy.
He didn't need to send me a fake traitor. He could just order me to tell him everything I knew about the rebellion.
You're lying to me. I tried it out, but it wouldn't get past my tongue. He wasn't lying, but he wasn't telling the whole truth either. What is it you want? From us being on the same side, that is.
A new dawn.
Rahim flicked one of the tracts that had fallen from the sky out at me between his fingers. It was creased from the pocket of his uniform.
A new desert.
Are you saying you want to put Ahmed on the throne?
It seemed Shira was dead wrong about him having designs on being the new Sultan. I'm saying I want my father off the throne and I can help you. On one condition. I want you and your rebellion to get my sister out of the palace.
Layla? Little round-faced Layla, who made toys for the children in the harem and who reminded me of my littlest cousins, even though she had a decade on them. Why? She's as safe here as anywhere else, and she told me herself it could be a lot worse.
If I'm right,
She's in danger.
I thought of Shira asking me for Layla's secrets, watching her out of the corner of her eye, ready to take down any threats to her child before they could do the same to her. But somehow, I didn't think that was what Rahim meant. Men weren't usually aware of the politics of women. What kind of danger?
He didn't answer the question.
You're a Demji. I've seen you do your little trick every day in my father's war meetings. So, am I telling the truth?
Yes. It came out easily.
Am I trying to trick you?
I tried yes again, but it wouldn't come out. No.
Can you trust me?
I don't trust anybody in here. Yes. But I wasn't giving up that easily. But I want to know why. A lot of folk don't get along with their fathers.
I'd learned that firsthand the day before in the vaults. Doesn't mean most want them dead.
Fathers don't usually send their children away to die when they're 12 years old, either.
Rahim said it so matter-of-factly, it surprised me.
Or at least that's what I've heard. I don't have much of a point of comparison.
Rahim started walking again, and this time I moved with him. How'd you get sent away? I kept pace with him.
Seems like half the harem would kill for a chance at escape.
Me included.
Rahim didn't answer right away. And when he did, he picked his words carefully, deciding what to tell me and what to keep from me.
I tried to crack Kadir's skull open with my bare hands.
I hadn't been expecting that answer.
And how'd that work out for you? I asked.
Rahim caught my eye out of the corner of his.
That's what you ask me? Not why?
I've met Kadir. I can guess why.
I wanted to take something from my father the same way he did from me. Women vanish out of the harem every day. Most children just have to accept when their mothers vanish without a word. I wasn't prepared to be one of them.
I remembered how calm Layla had seemed when she told me that her mother had been taken away from her. She shared a mother with Rahim. I had to imagine he hadn't been quite as placid as his sister.
It took 3 soldiers to pull me off Kadir. His nose is still crooked, you'll notice.
He scratched the bridge of his own perfectly straight nose, hiding a laugh.
It was the Sultan's nose, I realized. That was what made him look like Ahmed. So how come you're not dead? I asked.
It looks bad for the Sultan to kill his own sons, especially after he already had so much of his family's blood on his hands. So my father decided to send me away to war to die quietly, or at least somewhere he wouldn't hear. My father underestimated me.
You became the commander instead.
The youngest ever, and the best.
He wasn't bragging, I realized. He sounded like Shahzad, easily certain that he was right.
Now, will you get my sister out?
I shouldn't be doing this. It ought to be Ahmed or Shahzad or even Jin here negotiating with Rahim. This wasn't a job for the blue-eyed bandit. But right now, I was the only one here. That depends what you've got.
How about an army?
That wasn't a bad opening offer.
The Emir of Ilyaz is due to arrive for Aurangzeb. He has as little love for the Sultan as I do, and the fighting force of Ilyaz nearly matches the rest of Miraji's combined. A word from me, and that army can be your rebel princes.
We'd arrived. The Sultan looked up as we entered.
Ah, Rahim.